नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Reading from the 6th canto, chapter 2, text 7. Ayam hi krita nirvesho janma kotya amhasamapi yad vyajahar vivasho namasvastyayanam harihe. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Ajamil has already atoned for all his sinful actions. Indeed, he has atoned not only for sins performed in one life, but for those performed in millions of lives, for in a helpless condition he chanted the holy name of Narayan. Even though he did not chant purely, he chanted without offense, and therefore he is now pure and eligible for liberation. Purport. The Yamdutas had considered only the external situation of Ajamil, since he was extremely sinful throughout his life. They thought he should be taken to Yamaraj and did not know that he had become free from the reactions of all his sins. The Vishnudutas therefore instructed that because he had chanted the four syllables of the name Narayan at the time of his death, he was freed from all sinful reactions. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verses from the Smriti Shastra. Namno hi yavati shaktihi papa nirharane harehe tavat kartum na shaknoti patakam pataki naraha. Simply by chanting one holy name of Hari, a sinful man can counteract the reactions to more sins than he is able to commit. This is in Brihad Vishnu Puran. Aveshenapi yannamni kirtite sarva patakaihi puman vimuchyate sadyah simhatrashter mrigeriva. If one chants the holy name of the Lord even in a helpless condition or without desiring to do so, all the reactions of his sinful life depart, just as when a lion roars, all the small animals flee in fear. Garuda Puran. Sakriducharitam yena harir ityaksharam dvayam baddha parikarastena mokshaya gamanam prati. By once chanting the holy name of the Lord, which consists of the two syllables Hari, one guarantees his path to liberation. This is from the Skanda Puran. These are some of the reasons why the Vishnudutas objected to the Yamdutas taking Ajamil to the court of Yamaraj. Ajamil has already atoned for all his sinful actions. Indeed, he has atoned not only for sins performed in one life, but for those that have performed in millions of lives, for in a helpless condition, he chanted the holy name of Narayan. Even though he did not chant purely, he chanted without offense, and therefore he is now pure and eligible for liberation. Hare Krishna. So, in this translation, it's very important, significant to note that when Ajamil chanted the holy name, he chanted in a helpless condition. Now, many times devotees who are in devotional service, they're practicing Krishna consciousness and chanting every day 16 rounds. There are so many names which devotees are chanting. But still we don't see some the results which come of the chanting of the holy names. Now the question is, what's wrong? What are we doing wrong? Certainly the holy name is effective. We have seen in the case of Ajamil that he just chanted and he became the Vishnudutta there to free him from the Yamdutas. So, important consideration or the reply to why a sadhaka does not get the benefit of chanting the holy name is because he does not chant in a helpless condition. Here it is said Ajamil has chanted in a helpless condition. And another very important consideration is that he chanted without offense. He chanted the holy name of Narayan without offense. He did not know what are the offenses that he should be avoiding. So without knowing, When he chanted, it was considered valid. So, certainly, we see that there is a difference in the quality of the chanting between Ajamil and the great devotees when they chant and the Sadhaka. Like, for example, there is the pastime of Draupadi. When she was being disrobed in the assembly, Kaurava assembly, so Dushasan was disrobing her and she was feeling very helpless. So at that time, she took shelter. Of whom? Not of Krishna, but she looked forward to the members, elder members of the Kaurava assembly for help. She thought they will come to her rescue. But when she saw all of them were looking down towards the floor, helpless, they couldn't do anything. So ultimately, then she thought, okay, if they cannot help, at least my husbands will help. They're powerful warriors, Kshatriya soldiers. One bheem was enough to annihilate all the Kauravas there present in the assembly. So she looked towards him and all the other Pandavas, but still they were helpless. So ultimately, she realized that they cannot really help me. She became now dependent on a little bit towards Krishna. But still, she did not completely depend on Krishna. She thought, now I will protect myself. Well, let me try my best. She, with both her hands, she was holding on to the cloth while Dushasan was trying to disrobe her. But ultimately, she realized that that's also not possible because Dushasan had the strength of 10,000 elephants. How could she protect? She was a helpless lady. So ultimately, when she realized that she could not save herself, so she raised her hand helplessly, chanting to the Lord. She called out to Krishna, "Krishna, please help." But still, she had faith. Somehow, she had that faith that I can protect myself. So she was holding on to her sari in one hand, and the other hand she was held high, and she was calling out to Krishna. So Krishna does not come to help if we feel that we have faith on anything else in this world. So he didn't appear at that time. And when Draupadi, when she felt that now it is not possible, it's impossible, Dushasan is too strong, there is no one to help me, I cannot protect myself also. At that time when she felt that the force of Dushasan is too strong, at that time she just completely surrendered to Krishna. She raised both her hands up high in the air and with complete helplessness, knowing that there is no other shelter in this world, she cried out to Krishna. And then when she took shelter of Krishna, in that helpless situation, at that time Krishna appeared, incarnated in the form of a sadi and then protected her. So we see there is certainly a difference when Draupadi chanted and how we or the sadhakas in Krishna consciousness chant the holy names. There's a difference in the quality of the chanting. What is that quality? The quality is of our consciousness, of that of surrender, of that of helplessness. And when we chant or when we are practicing Krishna consciousness, we have put anchors, we have taken shelter of various things in this world, which could be either our intelligence, either our bodies. We have some capabilities and we think that, I can do these things. I don't need Krishna, actually. We don't feel the need to surrender to Krishna. So that helpless attitude is not there. So when there's no helpless attitude, Krishna feels all right, you fend for yourself. You try for yourself, no problem. You practice, try to, on your own effort, try to make advancement. So that effect of chanting the holy name is not received because of the difference in the quality of the chant. This pastime of Ajamil was quoted by Haridas Thakur when he was in the association of Gordan and Gordan Majumdar. And what happened was, at that time, the two brothers, Majumdar brothers, they had arranged for a lecture in their house. So at that time, many people would come, great scholars, and they were discussing, and the Majumdar family, they took great pride in introducing Haridas Thakur to the assembled scholars and brahmanas and the devotees. They introduced him, saying that he's a great devotee of the Lord, Haridas Thakur, and he's chanting 3 lakh names of the Lord every day. So devotees were very inspired. So two aristocrats, they came and immediately offered their obeisances to Haridas Thakur. So all the others were looking and they started discussing the glories of chanting the holy names when they came to know that Haridas Thakur was into, you know, chanting of the holy names. And this, some said that the chanting of the holy names gives liberation from all sins. And they were discussing about how the glorious benefit one receives. So Haridas Thakur made a mention that, no, it is not the ultimate result of chanting the holy names that you get liberation. So he quoted this section from the Ajamil section, saying that by chanting the holy names of the Lord, you receive pure love of God. And he quoted the Bhagavatam, saying that how when our pure devotee chants the holy names, you know, his hair stand on end, tears flow from his eyes, his body starts trembling, and he receives the topmost benefit, the topmost pinnacle of spiritual life, that is pure love for Krishna. Liberation is just a byproduct. So when he made this mention, amongst the assembled Brahmanas was one puffed up person whose name was Gopal Chakravarti. So he started telling Haridas Thakur, how is it possible? What are you saying? What you are saying is nonsense. Liberation is such a great thing, and you are saying just by chanting the holy names you will get liberation so easily as a byproduct? This is nonsense. And he started blaspheming Haridas Thakur, saying that how he was from a very low family. And he was saying that, oh, the prediction of the Shastras is coming true, that a low-born person will be the proponent of the Shastras in the age of Kali Yuga. And I can see that this day has come. So in that way, he started criticizing Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur, in a very systematic way, started presenting the verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, explaining that how the topmost benefit is prema, and the byproduct of chanting the holy name is liberation. Even in the Namabha stage, even in the clearing stage of chanting of the holy name, one can get liberation. But still, because he was so puffed up, he could not listen to the words of Haridas Thakur. So he told Haridas Thakur that if you are wrong, if you are proved wrong, I will cut off your nose, he told Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur said, he accepted the challenge and he said, what to speak of you cutting off my nose? If what I said is not true, then I will myself cut my nose. And when Majumdar brothers, when they came to know that this Gopal Chakravarti, who was working for them, had committed such a great offense to such a great Vaishnava, Haridas Thakur, he said, what you have done is not good. By doing this, you have invited inauspiciousness in your life. Certainly, you cannot expect anything good in your life by offending a Vaishnava. So he took him out of his job. And within 3 days' time, this Gopal Chakravarti, who was a very handsome young man with a raised, beautiful nose, melted away with leprosy. He got leprosy for offending. Haridas Thakur was a great Vaishnava. Thus proving the fact that what Haridas Thakur said, that just by Namabhas chanting, the clearing stage of chanting the holy names, one can get liberation. It's just a byproduct. So this is the power of the holy name. And we see in the Shastras, the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, that how after Dhruva Maharaj achieved perfection and he came back home, took over the rule of the kingdom, ruled for 36,000 years as a king. He had become a pure devotee. Lord had given him a free ticket, a reserved ticket back home, back to Godhead. Told him that at the end of his life, he's going to come back home, back to Godhead. So while he was ruling the kingdom, his younger brother Uttam, he got killed by one of the Yakshas who were living in the Himalayas. So when that happened, Dhruva Maharaj became very, very angry. And he wanted to take revenge from the Yakshas. So he took his chariot and sped towards, left for the Himalayas. So he went to the Himalayas. He saw in the foothills of the Himalayas some ghostly kind of people living there. So he came to know that these are the people who are responsible for my brother's death. So immediately with his weapons, he started attacking the Yakshas and he started killing them. And he started slaughtering them in huge quantities. And when that happened, the Yakshas, they threw a spell upon Dhruva Maharaj. A powerful spell. And when that spell was thrown, Dhruva Maharaj became completely bewildered. And he started seeing illusions. What was that illusion? He started seeing from the sky showers of blood, bile, stool, bones, and dead bodies, corpses, head, hands, legs falling down from the sky. And he also saw snakes, serpents, and deadly scorpions falling down from the sky and ready to bite him. So such an illusion was created. So when Dhruva Maharaj saw this, he was completely shocked. He did not know, what is this? He was completely astonished. He got confused. He didn't know what to do. So at that time, the sages came to his rescue. Because they were favorable towards Dhruva Maharaj, because he was a pure devotee. So they came there and they advised Dhruva Maharaj. They told him that, Dhruva Maharaj, this is an illusion. This is not a reality. Please invoke the Narayanastra. And then this illusion will be dispelled. You are a pure devotee of the Lord. Remember this. You can never be defeated. So when Dhruva Maharaj was reminded by the devotees, the great devotees of the Lord, he immediately invoked the Narayan mantra. He chanted the prayers and he released the weapon. And as soon as he released the weapon, all the illusion was completely destroyed. And then again he attacked the Yakshas and he started killing them. So we see that the power of the holy name can actually destroy all the illusion within the life of a devotee. Just like Dhruva Maharaj was faced with illusion. He was seeing something which was not actually present. Similarly, we see in our lives objects of enjoyment which are actually illusory. But even during the practice of a sadhana, we are so much tempted and we think that this is for real. The illusory world that we see is for real. And we fail to take shelter of Krishna. And we fail to take shelter of the holy name. Not actually having faith, or we forget out of forgetfulness. But actually when you take shelter of the holy name, we can be freed from the illusion of this material world. So this is the power of the holy name. But you see, still day after day, the sadhaka chant, but he doesn't get any benefit. So why isn't it actually working for us? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambini, the Cloud Bank of Nectar, explains the dynamics of devotional service. Explains that why the chanting does not give effect. So he tells that basically we do not realize, there are various factors. Some of the factors he says is that we don't realize the importance of the mercy of devotees. So in this context he says, he quotes this verse, Yadrichaya mat kathadau jata shraddha tu yah puman na nirvanno nati shakto bhakti yogo sya siddhidha. He says, Yadrichaya mat kathadau, that bhakti will appear only according to its own volition. That means nothing can force bhakti to appear. Not tapasya, not our austerities, not our strictness in sadhana, not our purity, not our pious activities, not our good behavior. Nothing can attract bhakti. Bhakti can only be attracted by bhakti. When Bhakti Devi thinks that now I should appear, I should become merciful towards someone, then she appears. So bhakti is causeless. Only bhakti can appear bhakti. Now the sadhaka has no bhakti, or at least it's there within his heart, but it's covered up. So how he can attract bhakti? That's a question. It's not possible. So how is it possible to attract bhakti? So the answer is, who has got bhakti can attract bhakti, and who has got it? A pure devotee of God. So a pure devotee can give the prem, which is the result of chanting the holy names. So therefore, when a pure devotee becomes merciful to a particular devotee, then Krishna appears. Bhakti Devi appears in the life of that devotee. Therefore, to realize the importance of a pure devotee in our lives is one of the very important principles of devotional service. So the devotee actually delivers Krishna to the sadhaka. Now the question arises, how can that be so? Is the devotee more powerful than Krishna? But it is said that Vishwanath Chakravarti writes in the book that out of love, Krishna surrenders to his devotee. and therefore makes the devotee more powerful out of his own free will, and therefore the devotee has the power to actually deliver Krishna to the sadhaka. So by his mercy it is possible to get the prem, Krishna prem. So it is said that the mercy of Krishna follows the mercy of a pure devotee. Just like in Microsoft Corporation, I was told that there is one, Bill Gates has opened a charitable institute, a charitable organization, which they give charity to the organizations who are engaged in welfare activities and things like that. So one of the policies he has for his charitable organization is that if any of the employees, they give charity to any particular charitable organization, then the company also will give the same amount to that organization as a encouragement to that employee. So their charity follows the charity of the employees. Similarly, if they want to give charity to any other organization, they will see that is the government giving the aid to that organization. If the government is giving aid, then they will also give charity. So their charity follows the charity of the employees or the government. So similarly, in a similar way, Krishna, he is invested that, he makes that decision that he sees that a pure devotee is giving mercy to someone, then Krishna also gives mercy to someone. So therefore, to realize the importance of a devotee in a life is a very important consideration. Just like, there's a pastime of Shivanand Sen and the dog, being the yatra manager, being very compassionate, he sees that in the yatra there was a dog. And he becomes very compassionate to the dog and he started feeding the dog and taking good care of the dog. And one day, one of the devotees forgot to feed the dog and the dog disappeared. And Shivanand Sen came back and said, "Where's the dog?" So the devotee said, "We don't know, the dog has just disappeared." And then Shivanand Sen becomes so worried, and he sends 10 devotees to search for the dogs. "Go search the dog. The dog is a part of the yatra team and it's our duty to take care of the dog." And the dog went searching for the dog and couldn't find him. And the next day, again in the morning, Shivanand Sen said, "Again, go look for the dog." He was so concerned for the dog. He was so much of, he felt it was a responsibility to serve the dog. He was so, you can say, soft-hearted. He felt compassion for the dog. So he was nowhere the dog could be seen. And ultimately, when they reached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's place in Bengal, in Jagannath Puri, he found the dog sitting close to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And all the devotees and all, Shivanand Sen, they were like, they were shocked. "How is the dog here?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving coconut pulp to the dog. And he was telling the dog, "Chant Hare Krishna." And the dog was raising his paws and was chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare." Indicating that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was indicating that if a pure devotee becomes merciful to someone, then certainly I will also give mercy. So if we receive the compassion and the merciful glance of a devotee, then we can actually receive the mercy of the Lord. And that is the principle behind taking diksha. When you take diksha from a bona fide spiritual master, then because we are connected to a devotee who is very pure and who has received the mercy of the Lord, then we immediately come into the merciful companionship of the Lord. So, one may argue, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, well, if mercy is causeless, it doesn't have any cause, sadhana, nothing actually attracts bhakti, then why are we doing bhakti? Why are we actually putting any effort? So he explains, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that it's both. We put effort and then we get bhakti. Effort and the mercy, both should be there. When we put effort, it is like a ticket. We purchase a ticket and then we become eligible to receive the mercy of. So many times people say that, it's like a cat carrying the kitten. We are helpless. We can't do anything. Like I met one person, he was connected to some spiritual organization. So I just asked him, what are your principles that you're following? What is the sadhana? I said, "No sadhana, nothing. We don't follow anything." So do you follow any rules and regulations? I said, "Nothing. I'm not following anything." So then how come you'll make any spiritual advancement? So he said, "By the mercy of my spiritual master, I can be delivered This is the mercy. This is the mercy of my spiritual master, he was saying. But actually, that is not this philosophy laid down by the acharyas. So the example is not of a cat carrying its kitten, where the kitten doesn't have to do anything. But the example is that of a monkey carrying its baby, where the monkey walks around and the baby holds on to the belly of the monkey. So both is required. The baby monkey catches hold of the mother, and the mother also takes the baby from one place to another. So the example is given, like when a man has fallen into a well and a person throws a rope. A person may think, the rope is there, but why isn't the rope automatically tying itself, around my waist, then I can be delivered. You may think like that, but actually it is not so. He has to hold on to the rope. And when he holds on, then the rope is pulled up and then he goes up. So that is required. To hold on to the rope is very important. That is the effort that we put on. But the problem is that while holding on, we may think that we may become puffed up. We may think, I am putting an effort. It is because of my putting this effort, I am making progress. So to the degree the person becomes puffed up and he thinks that it is because of my effort that I am making progress, and what happens is, he tends to loosen his hold on the rope. And when he does that, he falls down back into the well. So when he remembers that it is actually by the mercy of the person who is on top of the well, who is pulling the rope, and it is his endeavor to hold on to the rope which is bringing him on to the top, then he will hold on to the rope helplessly and not neglectfully. He will become very dedicated, he will become very committed, and he will be absorbed, and he will put all his effort to hold on to the, cling on to the rope very firmly, and then depend on the mercy. So that is very important. Now it may happen that one may be in the well and may think that, it doesn't seem like I'm going outside the well. It doesn't seem like I'm making any progress. Now it may happen that we are making this assessment on the basis of our own time scale, our own relative viewpoint. Because we are so much deep inside the well, in a bottomless pit, that we don't even see that we are making any progress. And we may become impatient and we may think that I'm not making any progress. And we pretend that, there's nothing. There's no use of holding on to this rope. I was better off when I was sitting down. I was not putting effort. I was so happy. I was so comfortable, at least in the well. Now I have to hold on to this rope without any result. So just let me not give up. So he gives up the holding the rope and he again falls back into the well. That means leaving the process of devotional service, thinking that there's no result coming up. But the result is there. But we tend to become impatient. So patience while practicing Krishna consciousness is a very important principle. In the story, I remember that how these Gurukul boys had done a very wonderful pastime of the beggar who was on the street. And he was very helpless. And a very rich man, he comes there and he sees this beggar and he thinks, he seems quite capable. I'll give him a job of a peon in my office. So he takes that beggar, makes him a peon in the office. And he does his work very nicely. He shows great intelligence. So he gets promoted. And the employee becomes very happy by his work and still gives him promotion, and he gets promoted, and he becomes a manager in the company. So while he becomes a manager in the company, all the other colleagues are thinking, this person is just out from the street and he has now progressed above us also. They become very envious. They think we should pull him down. So what they do, they secretly go and observe. They investigate. Let's try to see if there is something wrong, fishy about him. Let's see if he's corrupt in his practices. So they observe that this man, after the office hours, he secretly goes, opens his cupboard, and he inspects something. So they think, that's it. We have found out. He's got all that accumulated money which he has received through corruption, and he's kept it inside that cupboard. Now we are going to expose him. We will go to the boss and we are going to tell him that how corrupt he is. Tomorrow is the day when we will bring him down. So they think, that's very, very good. So they plan out. So the next day they go. They go to the boss and they say, we have found out. We have investigated that this man of yours whom you have promoted to be the manager and thinking that he's very honest, he's a corrupt person. Just see in his cupboard there, which he secretly keeps up locked, which he goes and inspects at the end of the day. And we are very confident that it is actually bribe money.
So, boss, is it? Is it so?
I will go and check up. So he goes to the manager and says, what is in that cupboard? So the manager says, well, sir, it's nothing. Please, open it.
No, make him open it, boss. We know what it is inside.
He says, no, my lord, my master, I don't want to open this cupboard. It's very embarrassing for me. If you're honest, you will do it. Open the cupboard. And then, you know, he goes, opens the cupboard. And when he opens the cupboard, what do they find? They find the old tattered clothes of this beggar. And these people are shocked. There's nothing but this old tattered clothes. And they say, what is this? The boss asks this manager, what is this? So he says, these are my old tattered clothes. I keep it inside the cupboard. And at the end of the working hours, I look at those clothes and remember how fallen I was. And how mercifully you have actually engaged me in this service. And you brought me to this standard. So I always remember my fallen condition and remember how compassionate you were to me. And with that practice, I actually ensure that I'm always grateful. I'm always grateful. What was I and now what I am? By your mercy. So all the other people, when they saw what was the attitude of this man, they were like embarrassed. And they fell at the feet of this person and they begged for forgiveness. So similarly, in the heart of the Vaishnav, he must always remember what he was. If it was not for the mercy of the devotees, actually he would have not been in this position. And similarly, if it was not for the mercy of the devotee, it is not possible for him to again make progress, because remembrance or gratitude for what he has received in Krishna consciousness is a very essential quality in the life of a devotee to make progress. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that this is a very important principle, that when we are prosecuting devotional service, the devotional service must be pure. It should not be tinged with karma, jnana or yoga. Mixing with karma means what? When we put our priorities about what we like to do than what Krishna wants us to do through his representatives. We feel that I like this, I should do this. That's karma mishra bhakti. Yoga mishra bhakti is like when we think that I should achieve some perfection, some kind of perfection, which could be yogic or which could be anything, which could be either, you know, some of the talents which help a person to get some respect. Because ultimately, the yogis are doing everything for self-respect. So that gets mixed up. Bhakti gets mixed up, adulterated. Bhakti never gets adulterated, but bhakti does not manifest. Similarly, he says the last one is jnana. When you try to analyze the process of bhakti, and you try to think that how I can make advancement simply by one's intelligence, it's not possible. Again, there's a pastime of Srila Prabhupada, that how when he was going along with his disciple behind one truck, and in the truck there were some baskets put up. So on the baskets it was printed, you know, some pomegranates. And Prabhupada asked, what is in that basket? So the disciple said, the pomegranates. Prabhupada said, it's not pomegranates, it's oranges. So the disciple said, what? Oranges? It's pomegranates. It's written there, it's pomegranate. So the disciple wanted to convince Prabhupada that ultimately it is pomegranates, Prabhupada. It's not. So he slowed the vehicle and he brought him behind, the truck where the baskets were put up. And all of a sudden, he wanted to show Prabhupada that, look, Prabhupada, it's pomegranates. It's written on the basket that it's pomegranates. And all of a sudden, a wind blows and the tarpaulin just flies off and exposes all the other baskets. And it was revealed that all the other baskets were actually baskets of oranges, and there was only one basket of pomegranates. So when the disciple, he saw that, he was like completely shocked, and he was amazed to see that how actually many times we try to analyze with our intelligence to think that, you know, this is what it is, but we may actually be wrong. Like there was a disciple who was trying to tell Prabhupada said, look up this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, yes, Prabhupada, I think it is in the 4th chapter. And then he says, no, Prabhupada, I think it is in the 8th chapter. So Prabhupada just looked at him and he started looking toward the Bhagavad Gita and he couldn't find that verse, ultimately found the verse. And he said, okay, this is the verse. Okay, read it out, Prabhupada told him. And then he said, which chapter was it from? So he said, 4th chapter, Srila Prabhupada. So the idea is that many times we try to be using our intelligence to try to understand the process of Krishna consciousness, try to understand and capture Krishna within our you know, within our head, but it cannot be understood. Krishna cannot be understood with knowledge, with jnana. So ultimately, that is what we have to also give up. But no matter what, whether it is karma, jnana, or yoga, bhakti is so pure that it purifies everything. It purifies everything, just like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that, just like you touch a piece of a touchstone to any metal, it turns it into gold. Similarly, even though we may be in an adulterated fashion performing devotional service, still we can actually achieve success. But most important thing is to practice pure devotional service. As Krishna says, patram pushpam phalam tuyam yome bhaktya prayachade tadaham bhakti uparatam ashnami prayatatmanah. That simply offering of a fruit, leaf and flower and water out of devotion, I accept. Devotion is the most important thing. But if that is not there, then Krishna says, okay, if you cannot prosecute pure devotional service, then the next verse he says, yad karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhasi dadasi yad yad tapasyasi kaunteya tad kurushva madarpana. Alright, you cannot do that. Then you do whatever you want to do. Yad karoshi, but offer the fruits to me. One step lower. But alright, Krishna says, what will happen with that? Shubha shubha phalai revam. What is the verse? Shubha shubha phalai revam. Mokshasai karma bandhanai. Sanyasa yoga yuktatma vimukto mamupaishasi. That then eventually you will become purified. You will transcend what is auspicious and what is inauspicious in this life, whatever comes in this world. And you will be fixed in Krishna consciousness, sannyasa yoga yuktatma vimukto, and you will become liberated, mamupaishyasi, you will achieve me. So never mind, even if though we practice, but with the intention of making progress, with that grateful heart, with that desire to make progress, then we can actually achieve Krishna. Devotion is a very important aspect. Like, just like there is a pastime of one, the Shaligram Shila, which falls into the hand of a cobbler. And the cobbler, he starts using the Shaligram Shila to, you know, punch the nails inside the shoes. And while doing that, he would chant the prayers of Jayadev Goswami from Geet Govind. And so what happened was, Brahman had to come there, came there and he saw this Shaligram Shila with the cobbler. And he was thinking, my God, what is this? He inspects and he finds it's a Narayan Shila. He said, what an offense. He asked the cobbler, where did you get this Shaligram from? He said, someone sold it to me. He says, can you sell the Shaligram back to me? He says, yes, if you give me more money, you can take it back. So he takes the Shaligram, he pays him the cobbler money, takes the Shaligram Shila, and this Brahman keeps the Shaligram Shila on the altar, performs yajnas, sacrifices in order to counteract the offenses which had been committed towards the Shaligram. And at the end of the day, when he sleeps, the Lord appears to him and he says, my dear Brahman, I am so pleased with your service. Would you please send me back to that cobbler? The Brahman is shocked and he says, why, my Lord? Why? I was doing all these services. He says, yes, I am very pleased, but that cobbler, when he would use me to mend the shoes, he would chant the prayers from Geet Govind. Jayadev Goswami's Geet Govind, and that would be very pleasing to me. I really love those prayers. Because it has been composed by a great devotee, Jayadev Goswami. So he relishes that more than the ritualistic activities which are mentioned in the Shastras. So devotion is the most important concern. And if we do anything with devotion, that is immediately accepted by the Lord. So he says that bhakti is very essential, and that is actually the inspiration for us to surrender to Krishna. And then he gives various other reasons why chanting is not effective. He says five reasons. One is lack of true knowledge. Second is false ego. Third, material attachment, envy, and lastly, mundane engagements. So just to briefly touch upon these points, lack of true knowledge. A person may not have complete understanding of the process of devotional service, which may cause him a lot of anxieties. Like you see, there was one devotee in one temple, ISKCON temple, and she happened to get cancer. She developed cancer, and when she got cancer, she became very serious. And she became very serious, she started chanting, and within 6 months' time, she got initiated. So when the cancer spread in her body, it was paining her so much that she would come out, and to the devotee, she would talk, she would tell the devotees, you know, Bhagavan, aise kyun kar rahe hai mere saath? Why is the Lord doing this to me? I am chanting his name, but still. So the devotees explain to her, Mataji, the Lord is not doing this to you. It is your own karma. You should think like that. If you think that the Lord is doing this to you, you will not make any spiritual advancement. So we have to get our understanding correct. The process of devotional service must be properly understood. If we have any kind of wrong understanding, not only will we suffer but in devotional practices, but also actually we will not make any spiritual progress. And it may lead to even criticizing the Lord and the devotees. Like there's a pastime of a Bengali poet who comes and he tells Bhagwan Acharya, you know, I've composed this poetry. Please offer this to the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's his glorification. So Bhagwan Acharya said, we'll have to propose this to Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar generally censors all the poems. So he says, all right. So he says, okay, but before that I want to show it, tell you, read out the poem to you. So Bhagwan Acharya sits and he listens, and all the devotees also listen. Fantastic, eloquent poetry. They were very impressed. They go to Swarup Damodar and they say, Swarup Damodar, this person is an excellent poet. You must listen to it and also present it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swarup Damodar said, I am not interested in listening to the poetry of these mundane people. It's mixed with rasabhas. Generally, don't understand the principle of the devotional service, and they just mix up the whole thing. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he hears these things, mixture of rasas, he gets very agitated. He said, no, you must listen to this person. He's special. He's really special. And they keep, you know, probing. So Swarup Damodar thinks, okay, maybe, you know, let's take a look. So he calls this Bengali poet and he comes. And all the devotees assemble. And the devotees present the Bengali poet to Swarup Damodar. And Swarup Damodar sits and he listens. And he starts composing the poem. He starts reciting the poem. Swarup Damodar is listening. And he says, Lord Jagannath has appeared. And Lord Jagannath, who's like the body, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, who's like the spirit of Lord Jagannath. And he's spreading the mercy. And he has appeared in Jagannath Puri and he has delivered this world. He's delivering the world. Swarup Damodar heard this. He became so offended. He started criticizing this Bengali poet. All the devotees were shocked. They said, why, what happened? So you are a great offender. You are comparing Lord Jagannath, simply a body, and you are comparing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a spirit. You are making differentiation between the body of Lord Jagannath and the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. The Lord's deity form is non, there's no body and there's no spirit. You made that differentiation. That is a great offense. Secondly, you compared Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a spirit soul who's infinitesimal, when Lord is actually infinite. You made this very great offenses. So then he corrected him. Even though your intended meaning was blasphemy, but actually your words are glorifying the Lord. Lakshmi Devi has used your words to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like Jarasan, Shishupal, and even Indra, when they compose poetry, Lakshmi Devi uses their words to glorify the Supreme Personality of God. So she said, so Swarup Damodar said that the real meaning of what you said is that Lord Jagannath has appeared. He's very merciful, but only his mercy is distributed to those who go and meet him. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared and he's moving Lord Jagannath and he spreads his mercy to everyone around. That is the true meaning of what you have actually said. So when he heard this perfect understanding of the Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness, he was embarrassed, became fearful, and he took a straw within his teeth and he surrendered to the devotees. And then he became very humble and he became accepted by the devotees. So from that day onwards, they introduced him to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being a humble devotee, but not as a great poet. And that way he got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that way we see that how to get a very clear understanding of Srila Prabhupada's philosophy, and that philosophy of devotional service is very important in the lives of the world. So there are other points, since we are falling short of time. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bo.